Okay, Masatin Patel, my favorite influencer. How are you doing?
Good. Good weekend. I play some golf this weekend in Sun City.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my shoulders is a bit stiff, but we're good.
I don't trust him. But nonetheless, we also have someone who usually plays golf when he's not, of course, racing cars. Keegan Masters is normally my star of the week. And, of course, he is the Porsche Carrera Cup Italia champion, making South Africa definitely so proud. When we say no DNA, just RSA, definitely part of the champs, making us proud. Keegs, thank you for joining us.
Am I going to get into a Porsche today?
I don't trust your driving at all. I think you might crash that Porsche. Thank you for joining us, Kings. How are you doing?
Thank you, Chloe. Happy to be back and happy to be here with you guys.
Porsche Carrera Cup Italia champion, has it sunk in yet?
Yeah, it has in some ways, but obviously I haven't got the trophy yet. So I think when we get the trophy, that will be much better.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going this weekend to Italy to get the trophy. So looking forward to that.
You must not only talk about the trophy, even the money. Have they put the money in?
Trust the football people to talk about money. But a lot has been happening in the world of sport. So let's quickly find out what's in your top stories.
Bafana Bafana coach Hugo Bruce has checked the permutations and confirmed draws in both qualifiers against Uganda and South Sudan will see South Africa through to the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations in Morocco next year. The Springboks, who take on England on Saturday in Twickenham, have returned to the top of the World Rugby rankings after a 32-15 victory over Scotland in the opening Autumn Nations Series match last weekend. Legendary former Proteas Bawola Makantini believes Cricket South Africa should scrap the two-division domestic format and revert back to franchises if the national team is to have a balanced democratic representation.
Well, with a lot happening in the world of sport, it certainly makes it a tad difficult to choose, of course, a star of the week. We'll start with Mahlatsi Mphahlele because he normally steals people's stars of the week. So who has impressed you in the past few days?
Well, you're lucky today. Your star of the week is in the studio.
I know, right?
Yeah, but for me, I'll go with Magezi, Magezi FC. I think a team that is new in the PSL, going all the way to the final.
Yeah.
Kali knockout against Sundowns the following weekend. I think they've done well for themselves. At the beginning of the season, if you had said that they will be in the final, people would have laughed at you.
For sure.
So I think they've been good, good on them. And then we'll see how they go in the final against Sundowns next weekend.
We definitely will. And well, as Mahlatsi alluded earlier on, that normally my star of the week is on the other side of the world. Today, here in South Africa, right here in the studio. I'm absolutely stoked. Keegan Masters, who has impressed you? I know, right? Doesn't happen often, but I'm super psyched. But who has impressed you, Keegs?
I would have to say my star of the week, even though it wasn't this week or the previous week, was Max Verstappen in Brazil. He did an amazing job to come from 17th to 1st and also win with 10 seconds. So even though I don't support him, he did do a very good job, and you have to give him credit. So, it was a pity that Lando couldn't do anything, but he did a good job, Max.
Indulge me a bit. When you look into the championship this year and how competitive it has been, with Max also not always being the race winner, what have you made of this 2024 Formula One season?
I mean, I've been there for 8 of the races, and it's been really interesting. I mean, It's never good for the sport if there's only one winner. And obviously it's good for Max, but you always want to see a fight. And Lando is a good underdog fighter.
Yeah.
And comeback kid, kind of, would you say. But, I mean, McLaren itself even has come a long way. And it's so nice to see McLaren back at the top where they used to be.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that. And it's a pity that Lando hasn't been able to maximize all of his pole positions, but he's done a good job, and
for sure,
he's made the racing interesting for the sport, so it's been fun to watch.
It definitely has been fun to watch, and a team that's also been fun to watch this season in the EPL is Chelsea, and that is my star of the week, because man, not only did I get a point over you, my cousin Patlelo, who you've been building for the past 2 years, by the way, so it's great to see Chelsea, of course, getting in form, and the players really trying to figure out, of course, the style of play that we're adapting to. So it's great to see them, of course, on the run, and I mean on the top. Champions League, we might be back.
Yeah, if there's one team that is trying to kill me, it's Arsenal. But no, we'll hang in there.
We definitely will hang in there. But I mean, Keegs, Porsche Carrera Cup, Italia champion. Talk to us about the season that has been, and really how you had to adapt into racing the series, also in, of course, the Super Cup, because you've done a lot of different series within your career, from, of course, here in South Africa to having to move overseas.
Yeah, sure. So it's been an amazing year, obviously. But I've been with this team for now 3 years, mm-hmm. or 2 years, sorry, my mistake. I've been in Europe for 3 years now, mm. so it's nice to, I've kind of settled down there quite a bit. I got a good family relationship with the team. Mm. The Italians, they're always hubbly and bubbly, friendly. So yeah, it's very nice to work with them, even though sometimes you get frustrated and it doesn't go your way. But, you know, that's motorsports, and you can't always have everything perfect, the engineers and the team. So there are mistakes here and there, but it's about maximizing when you get everything right and minimizing your mistakes. And I think the team did a good job this year, especially in Super Cup. We still one of the smallest teams in the grid and finished fourth position in the international series. So that's a really good, I would say, show for them in their third season ever in Super Cup, and my second season in Super Cup. So they've done a really good job. I mean, I think they're definitely going to be the team to beat in the future, the way they work. And it's been an honor to work with them, and we'll see what happens for the future. Maybe I'll stay with them, or we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, I just want to say, obviously, the most important part of your focus will be your job. But if you're in a foreign country, it's quite important to immerse yourself into the tradition, into the cultures, and how much of, you know, acclimatization you have had to do into the culture.
Yeah, honestly, the Italian culture, I absolutely love it. Like, I've been with the German team before, and they're very like straight and strict, and they get the job done. You know, they do the job. Mm-hmm. Where the Italian team does the same thing, except you kind of build a relationship with them, like a friendship. Like with my engineer, we're quite close in terms of we message each other every now and then. Mm-hmm. The communication has been really important, and it's been really good. I mean, on weekends that we haven't performed, I would say straight to them, like we would have our laughs and stuff, outside of the racetrack when we go out for dinners and stuff like that, and we'll joke around. But if there's really a problem on the racetrack, we'll say it straight up and speak openly about it. And I think that's what's been the most crucial part of the year for us, is to be frank with each other and understand each other clearly, because it's very easy to lose each other in motorsports and to not understand what each other wants. You know, either I'm not driving correctly, or the car's just not good, or it's not getting fixed. So yeah, you need to work well with your team, work well with your engineer, have a trust between each other, because at the end of the day, he's setting up the car and you're driving it. So you need to trust that he's doing his job correctly, and he needs to trust that you do your job right. So yeah, it's a team sport, and I have a good relationship with my team, and I've really enjoyed racing with them this year.
I remember there was a time a while back where Valentino Rossi mentioned that, you know, going to a track after Formula One has been there, it's not really great for the bikes. How is it for you guys, you know, racing alongside when there's a Formula One weekend, you also have your race there? I think you've mentioned 8 in the season. How is that for you?
Yeah, so we race alongside Formula One in Porsche Super Cup. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. I mean, it's a big show throughout the whole weekend. It's not so nice when you want to leave the track late.
Yeah.
But, it's completely different to any other series I've ever competed in. not just because of the glitz and glamour around, but also because of the Formula One rubber that's laid, gets laid down on the track. So what we've experienced from the Friday through to Saturday and Sunday, the track is evolving so much that we constantly change in the car. Mm. And it's so difficult on an engineering perspective for them to assume what setup would be right for the next session, because we only have one practice session on the Friday, and then we have a 30-minute qualifying on the Saturday, and then a 30-minute race on the Sunday. So each day the track's different. You need to adapt the car for the track. The amount of grip that gets laid down is just incredible. It's actually mind-blowing. Mm. I've never ever experienced anything like that, and it's quite interesting. Yeah.
Maybe let me go. Obviously, you know, earlier on you touched on the glitz and glam that, you know, we always see the finished product and stuff, but you guys are constantly under a lot of pressure to perform, and we live in the in an age where mental health is being put into the spotlight. You know, how do you deal with the pressure? Because there must be a lot of pressure out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, last year was extremely intimidating because it's such a big international series, very prestigious in its own. And you know, Super Cup is so competitive. It's tough. I mean, every other manufacturer looks at the winner of Porsche Super Cup to see if they can get him or not. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with a lot of fast drivers, talented drivers, whether or not they have the money to train all the time and have the slight advantage over you or not, you still have to perform and try to beat them, you know. So you can't really have excuses for that. It was tough. I mean, last year I had to get a sports psychologist, and just to give me the tools I needed to get some confidence back in myself, because it's such a different environment, and you can get lost very quickly, especially if you're not performing. So I mean, there's races where you just feel like you did everything you can, but it still wasn't good enough, and those are the races that are the hardest to get over, because you sometimes question yourself, am I good enough to be here or not? But you know, we built ourselves strong enough to get over that, and we managed to get some good races under our belts and perform under the pressure. And you know, you need that pressure to ignite your adrenaline, like those nerves before the race. Yeah. It's so important, and I love those nerves. Honestly, I actually live off those nerves. Yeah. Nerves. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, this year I think we are so much stronger mentally, also the team, because the team's also very young. We kind of like the underdogs.
Yeah.
So the pressure's not there, as in like we are the team to beat, and that type of pressure. Our pressure is to prove a point that we got what it takes to be here. And I think this year we did exactly that. And yeah, I mean, we scored a few podiums, and the podium at Monaco in our second race was definitely a highlight reel.
Yeah.
And not one to, or one to not forget.
For sure.
One to remember for forever. So yeah, that was quite special. And I think that kind of solidates your ability with the team and with yourself. But yeah, it is hard. It's like any other sport, I would say.
So staying with that, I remember there was a time Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff always said that the highs are nice, the wins are nice, you get to enjoy them, but you kind of enjoy the victories, it's very short-lived, but then the defeats and the almost made it, it's a bit tougher, you kind of wallow in that just a bit longer because you're thinking, man, I could have done it, it could have been, and we're so close.
Yeah.
Why is that from your perspective?
Yeah, it's honestly strange because with our race calendar, we got races straight after each other, so close. So you do a win, and then you have to kind of restart immediately because the next race weekend's at a different track.
Yeah.
You have to restart over, go through the practice qualifying race. So you don't know if you're going to be fast at the next race. It's a completely different track. So you can't just be overly confident and happy, like, ugh, I won the last race.
Yeah.
Like, who cares about the next race? Or, like, I'm going to win it. Doesn't work like that.
For sure.
You have to carry on working hard, and I would say stay humble, because I think it's quite easy to get a big head over a win, and then the next weekend you can get dropped straight away. I mean, the guys can destroy you, like, if you're not focused. So, yeah, you need to really work hard and I mean, with the wins, you're happy about it. You celebrate for that night, and then the next day you start focusing for the next race.
All right, and then lastly, before we let you go, I mean, you look into Motorsport South Africa. I mean, you're a product of course, racing and the country. You have the Van der Linde brothers as well, who are doing well in their own series. Talk to us about really the growth that you've seen, the young talent that you've seen, and what the future looks like for the youngsters who are hoping that one day, because I've spoken to a few drivers who say, geez, one day I want to be a Masters. One day I want to be a Van der Linde brother as well, just to make sure that I'm also doing well. So you guys are showing that the dreams are possible, which I think is fantastic for us.
Yeah, look, I think SA's motorsport has picked up quite a lot. It's nice to see more manufacturers put in some money in the sport, like Toyota.
Yeah.
I think BMW are starting to do something as well now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's always been, well, before when I was racing, it's been more VW dominance, you know, like with just one manufacturer, but it's nice to see all the other manufacturers coming in, so it kind of grows the value of the sport and attracts more people.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, yeah, our South Africans have done very well. I mean, even the Mabunda brothers now are going overseas. Leighton Faree is also another young fast driver. And a lot of other South Africans are messaging me about where should they go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people planning on moving up and making the step to Europe. It is tough, it's a lot of money to invest, but yeah, if you're good enough and if you think you're good enough, give it a go. It's an amazing world out there and it's nice to explore. But don't get me wrong, SA Motorsport's still very good.
Mm-hmm.
But you could make a living out of SA Motorsport, but not as well as you would in Europe, obviously, where all the base home of the manufacturers are.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's looking good, and I must say the off-road rally is looking really good with Toyota, with Henk Laterkind and all of them. So yeah, that's always very fast and crazy rally.
I think before he goes back, can you please take me on a spin in that Porsche?
You'll have to come fly over with me.
Please, just for 30 minutes, I'll be happy.
Maybe the 9 hours of Kyle Army.
I'm competing in the 9 hours of Kyle Army. Unfortunately, it's not my car, so you'd have to ask for it.
No, you will drive. I just want to be there.
But Keith, thank you so much for joining us. And man, we're absolutely proud of the work that you're doing. Keep on waving the South African flag high. And of course, then we're also hoping that Bafana Bafana will continue to raise the South African flag high as well. So let's quickly find out what Coach Hugo Bruce has to say as they prepare to take on Uganda. And then on the flip side, we've got two gentlemen who, of course, played football on the highest level, where we get to profile player wellness.
Two draws, always be qualified, because in the game against Congo, we are the winner. So if we have two draws, we have 6 points ahead. And Congo wins two times, they are with the same points as we.
Yes, but have you considered?
No. I don't. You know, I have to be honest. Sure, I looked at the previous weeks, what the rules are, if they are equal points. Yeah. Because I know a few years ago, I think South Africa was dancing on the pitch and they were not qualified. So we can't make a mistake.
But I'm not saying just in the case of equal points. I mean, you could lose both games. I mean, I don't want
to. You know, when we lose two games, 5 minutes after the game, I'm on a flight to Belgium. You can be sure of it. You can be sure of it. If we can't win, okay, Uganda, but not against, at home against South Sudan, I tell you, I take immediately the flight and you will see me never back again.
Well, very bold words from our coach saying that he will leave and resign as the Bafana Bafana head coach if we don't qualify for AFCON. Makhasi Bakele thinks that no, it's already in the bag. And some might say, maybe not in the back, but joining us now is, of course, two gentlemen who have played in the highest level and, of course, esteemed as well, still very much active in, of course, football issues that, of course, pertain player welfare. Benson Mklomo joins us now and, of course...
Mr. Benson Mklomo
joins us now. He was telling us off-air that he refers himself as the Mr. now because he can't be a footballer forever. And, of course, SG as well in Nhlanhla Shaba ranks, one of my favorites. He comes from my province, so sometimes as we are frustrated, I'm like, my guy. That's not the case. Mbalenhle is where he's from. Mpumalanga, of course. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Shaba, because Mkhai, it's the Kalanga. How are you doing?
No, I'm good. And thank you very much for having us. We're looking forward to the discussions that are enriching and that will build and also, you know, ensure that we enhance the capacity of those that are concerned with the football matters holistically. Kiyabonga kakhulu.
100%. Mr. Benson, how are you doing?
I call him my younger.
I always call him my younger.
Thanks for having me. And I hope people will listen and understand what I want to talk about.
That's
the mission and the purpose.
Shaba, I mean, when you look into this Bafana side, the task ahead, and I mean, also the players selected, what do you make of the squad? I mean, we always say that there's certain players who could have been selected, could have not, but when you look into it realistically, so what do you think of this Bafana squad?
We've been doing well, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'll always be a contested terrain. I'm confident. I mean, looking at where we come from and exactly putting ourselves in a situation where we are just almost qualified, you know. It shows the consistency and the fact that we have built a good team. I mean, games will be good and some won't be good, but team unity is there, and I think the nation is gelling in terms of the way they play, and we can only hope that things get better. I like what I see at this point.
Yeah.
Obviously, you won't be happy with every game, but that's just the nature of football, but we're on the right track.
I think the other important thing is how we get over the absence of the guy from England, the striker. Lyle Foster and also Themba Zwane. They've been key for this team for a while now. But I mean, the guys who are there, I think they need to rise to the occasion and make sure that they help us. I think the ideal scenario is to go to Uganda and win there and then eliminate all the problems. But even if we get a draw there, we should be in a position to beat South Sudan at home. But I've got no doubt we'll qualify for AFCON.
Same here.
I've got no doubt.
And then before we wrap this up, I want to find out from you two gentlemen. I mean, we've got our youngster, the president, Yama 2K, Urile Mofokeng. What have you guys made of him? And really the progression. I remember, I mean, his start in Bafana Bafana. It's just a two-minute stint, Nyana, his debut, where you look into other nations like Spain. Kids younger than him already have those national caps. They are playing regularly into their national setup. So talk to us about also, you know, South Africa and really, I'd say, delaying introducing younger kids into the senior team.
I won't say it's delaying. We live in a dream world. These youngsters are hard to find. One in a lifetime, one in one generation you can find.
So but here in South Africa.
I think, yes, that's how it is over the decades. I think this one might be one of them, like Steve Lekolea, like Jomson. It might be one of them. But not say everyone can do it. No, that's not the chance play. International is very tough.
All right, Shaba, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's one of those, I think, rare talents. He actually reminds me of Thulani Serero. Yeah. When he was emerging, you know, the magic and the love and the passion, the necessary arrogance, you know, fearless at this particular point. It's really good and it's a marvel to watch, you know. So I hope he gets an opportunity and we trust him to play because he's shown that he can really give us the best. But we must also ensure that we protect these youngsters and get the necessary guidance because also stardom comes with its own demise, and if it's not really controlled and properly guided and navigated, we had Abuphakamani Mahlambi where we expected a lot more. So it's good to speak about those who are doing great, but at the same time, I think we also need to look at the other side, you know, and just bring them close and ensure that we mentor them through the process, because we can't lose such great talent. It's very necessary to keep it. It's exciting.
There was a boy at SuperSport some years back, Pilan Nkwela. I don't know what happened to him. There's a lot of players who showed promise and an early agent. You know, they didn't fulfill their potential. Mm-hmm. Talking about the president of the 2000s, I know in South Africa we are obsessed with overseas and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if players go to overseas, I think they must go to the right environment. And a good example is Sander Campbell. Go to Club Brugge, they assess and they realize that maybe he's not quite ready for the first team. He plays in the reserve league. He's doing very well there.
Mm-hmm.
And the more he does well there, I'm quite sure that next season will be promoted and go play first team football next season. Mm-hmm. And that's where he will start showing what he can do at the highest level. And I think Mofokeng deserves an opportunity of not that he's not good at Pirates. The structure at Pirates is very good, the coaching is good and all that.
Yeah.
The environment is right, but I think he needs to be tested at a higher level. If you check players around the world of his age, you know, they're approaching what, 7-10 caps for national team.
Mm-hmm.
He has not played even 90 minutes of national team football, so he's going to lag behind. If he's going to go to Europe and play against the Lamals and the Fodens and them, he's way behind. So they need to find a way how to fast track him. And it's not only him. There's quite a number of young South African players who are doing very well at various clubs who needs to be fast tracked. I mean, these guys can't even play Kwasafa Cup.
That's what I want to find out now from Benson, because I remember having a conversation with Bratrot, and he was talking about how back in their days when finding Abomachians at school was the easier task, and then you could groom them and develop them and make sure that they are ready to, of course, then play in your big clubs and, of course, then later internationally. So why is it a dream for young South Africans now to get, you know, that one in a lifetime? But back in the days, these youngsters, we could easily find them because of the school tournaments that were happening back then.
You put it right, school tournament. Now, let's just say school tournament. A lot of playing time. You know, you play at school, you play in the township. That's a lot of time touching the ball. That's how you develop. It's not about going overseas. It's how much time you spend on the ball for you to learn how to use it properly. So we don't have much competition. We have DDC, only 30 games done. No extra competition, not against anyone in Africa. So if the team is in Africa and the boys get chance to compete in Africa, that's how they develop. That's how Sanders players develop, because they were in Africa. That's how my chance developed, because they were in Africa. Our Dr. Kumal Chiefs, they were in Africa. So the more we play African Champions League, the better it is for us. Not to go overseas, but we need more competition in the continent to test ourselves how far we are.
I mean, Shaba, I've met you at a few tournaments back home where you also, you know, just try to encourage the kids around, where you bring in also professional footballers like your Thabang Monares, your Aubrey Gomez, who came to one of your tournaments back in Mbalenhle. Talk to us about the talent that really you see within those tournaments, and really then what happens, the progression from when you scout them, or where you see that, okay, there might be talent here, but then how do you assist that talent to make sure it doesn't get lost in the system?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because mostly with the things we do, you find that there's a structure that's fighting itself. And that is where I think when you go back to townships, you find that a lot of talent remains where it is and it's stagnant, because there are opportunities out there, but elephants are fighting, and the grass that suffers is the development of these kids. You know, it's very useless in my view, pathetic. And when I look at our journey, I mean, I was one of the fortunate ones. You know, we were scouted playing a friendly in Johannesburg, and I took a flight to Cape Town, and I never looked back.
And then I went to Amsterdam.
Yes, Amsterdam, and then back, and all of that. But there are those who struggled for it. Like Abu Thabang Monaro had to go to an academy in KZN, you know. Kelvin Kadi, I'm a 30 taxi to go and try somewhere in Joburg, sleep with relatives. Yulizom Jembus, the journey has not been easy for others. But what happened with me, I was the first professional footballer at Kovan Mbeki region, you know, in the greater part of Mpumalanga. And I didn't know that I inspired a lot of these guys to know that actually this is doable. You know, we looked at it on TV and we just thought it's something that is there and it's not for us, but this guy has done it.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get back and they tell the stories about Mnare, Abukadi, all the guys, I'm like, wow, okay, I inspired people and I was just doing this for myself. Then I realized the role that I played by just pursuing my dream. Over and above, I'm giving back now, because at the end of the day, it's about promoting the talent and the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good that they play football. It keeps them off the street. But I am not one for a one-day tournament and then we say we are making an impact. I mean, even with the institutions that I have meetings with or proposals, we want perpetual campaigns, because if you are keeping kids off the streets for a longer period of time and put them in the development structures where we rechannel and repurpose their minds, we have a bigger chance of beating the social ills and ensuring that we unearth these stars, you know, for the future. The one day thing doesn't really work. So we bring skulls. I mean, like you said, Begnabo Opri, Musali Busa would have been there,
yes,
to also inspire the guys. They rub shoulders with those stars that they see on TV. Tera Maliwa, when he was a scout at Sundowns, who's now a Chiefs, he was there to look at the talent and look at the player of the tournament in that particular time. He played for Utongati and right now is at Polokwane City.
Yeah.
You know, and we bring scouts because it's good to play football. But if nobody who's scouting for talent is there, it's just mere games for fun. And at the end of the day, we always try and say we play to promote the talent. And SAFPO is taking that route as well, because right now we're very passionate on issues of transformation and development. I mean, as per the mandate here, General Assembly, we came back, the scope is expanded. We have to go at grassroots level. These kids need to understand the work of SAFPO at that level to also grow with the organization so that we build power to achieve more as a unit. So we're on the right track.
So Shaba, I see, I mean, now obviously moving into the issue of what you guys do as the as SAFPO, I see you've been busy over the last few weeks, you know, visiting clubs and stuff. What do you find when you get to clubs, when you speak to players, and in terms of just common or general issues that players have of employment?
We lag behind as footballers, and I think based on where we come from and none of us fighting for that space, there's a very big dichotomy in football. We are divided such that there are those who just there to play football. There are those who play football but don't understand that our lives is not only just about football. We have to take responsibility for much greater things than just to be on the field of play. At this point, you have a situation where players don't even have a funeral cover for themselves, you know, and if the club does not offer that, I don't feel I need to take responsibility to be buried with dignity, you know, and I know SAFPO would have been to a few unfortunate incidents where we would have lost players. We had to really contribute for the burial, and this is a professional football. It's stories that never reaches the media. It's not our job to create propaganda, but it's for us to actually protect the image of footballers. Players don't have life insurance. You know, they are family figures, they are fathers. So when something happens to them, they leave their kids and the family destitute because there is no continuity in terms of the legacy that they would have built. And we think we are still playing and that is not really important. Players still don't understand that if I'm transitioning from one team to the other, in the period when I'm still looking for employment, there is a UIF contribution that I pay on a monthly that is deducted on my salary. It's time for me to make that application so that whilst I look for employment, whilst I put fuel in my car to drive to Polokwane or wherever, because I've invested in that. So we come from, I think, a tradition where there would have been resistance. And also, administration in football was just about the results on the field. We never looked at building a serious capacity and potential amongst these players so that one day in the society, they can be integrated into key various positions and also assist in the growing and transformation of this football game that we are talking about, where we have leaders and administrators who really take the agenda forward. So amongst the few things that I've mentioned, you also have the contractual issues that will never end. Employer-employee relationship, there are complications when it comes to that. You know, sometimes some are taxed and their tax is not really paid towards us. They encounter problems. These are services and things that we try and assist with. But the simple entry-level things, when you look at it, Mahlax and you, Chloe, you are like, ah, these things we think they are covered. You'd be shocked at how many of these things are not covered. You know why? Because we have not really been taught to take ownership of the football agenda as footballers. We don't come from a school of thought. We just come from a school of football and development. And life is not just about playing. And you know, these are young men, which is also one thing that we must realize. And as a footballer, we need to mature very quicker than normal. Because it's a game that you can play whilst you are still young. The minute you are 32, 33, when you reach a normal level age of maturity, this is when the door is almost closing on you. A lawyer can mess up. An accountant can mess up at the age of 36 at Haman. Man, I need to change my life. All of these things, I have not invested, I don't have a property, I have not pursued any business or extra income. Let me really now sit down and refocus, you know, and repurpose my life. There's an opportunity for them. Footballer, when you get there, it's time for you to leave. And what then becomes the discussion? Discussion is you wasted all your money. But one thing that we also forget as a society is that these are kids that are playing football. But if we all understand and we're united in addressing these issues with them, abantwana laba singabasiza in terms of many things that are happening. But we keep bashing them because you expect a 22-year-old to make a decision of a 45-year-old just because they are famous and they are footballers. Mm-hmm. It does not work like that. So that's exactly where we are.
It really doesn't. And I mean, Mayanga, to bring you into this, I know also in, back in your playing days, the conversation in terms of your contracts and remuneration, it wasn't a conversation you wanted to have where you're like, employer, you see how much I'm deserving and then let's pay that, but I just want to play football. Now when you look into it in hindsight and the conversation that you're having as well with upcoming footballers, because I know you're also a mentor, talk to us about, you know, those lessons that you learned now in hindsight, because hindsight is the most beautiful thing that we could ever have as human beings.
Yeah, I've learned the hard way, you know, roller coasters, find myself in deep trouble because of no knowledge, making decisions that nearly cost my life, because without money there's nothing you can do. Without family you are lost. We spend most of our time on the field and we lose families. When we retire, most of us divorce, and we put it in the wrong way where we say, yes, but standard must be man. No. Honestly, we don't spend time with our girlfriends. We don't spend time with our kids. I've got a 22-year-old daughter that is second year university, and I only knew her in 2010 when I was injured. Only then I understood that I never knew my daughter. I was always, when it's pre-season, I'm in a national team. When we come back, I'm in Africa. So I never spend time with my kids. So we don't have family relationship. And then when it comes to contract, we don't want to find ourselves where we argue with the owner. So we let that to our managers, which our managers use that to rip us off, which is the truth. That's why they can't even mention our salaries. Your fame is not equal to your bank balance. You know, Dico was lucky with the extra sponsorship. I think Jasmine did a good job with his crew. Some, I don't know what they did. There are players that went overseas, came back, broke. Why? Because we as the SG said, we are children. We don't mature the same.
For sure.
And we're and children, and we are breadwinners, most of us. And we call it black tax, which for me is not black tax. You are helping your family. I don't think you have to allow your family to suffer while you are working. But you need some guidance. You need some policies in line to guide us. But in Ghana first, we say a child must do, no, a child, you must direct a child and force him to do the right decisions. Policies will force us to make right decisions. I think that's what we need at this point in time. Proper policies for soccer players.
Mike, just to follow up, there's also a turn. I mean, obviously you guys are here, you've lived it, you've been there. There's also this thing where when you go to the younger guys and you talk to them, it enter here, gets out of here. Most of them don't want to listen because they are here and then it's their time. They feel like you want to disturb them from doing whatever they want to do. You know, how do you keep on knocking at the door of these young guys for them to get this message that we have to do things right, otherwise we'll have problems going forward?
Let's go back. These are kids. They don't know anything. Policies. If a contract can say when you sign for PSL, 25% of your salary goes to investment. It's a must. we have to do things by force for these kids. We know we're doing the right thing. It must be a must. They are doing it nice. And there are players that are still waiting for their money. If you reach a certain age, 30 or 35 or 40, that's only when you're going to get your money. For winning, if something happens, then obviously the family benefits. The policies must be a must. When I joined Sundowns 2005, we had bonuses twice a week, more than our salaries. Sometimes we get 15 grand a game. You eat it, you know, almost Saturday you're going to get it again. But when Peter joined, there were rules. Look at this current group that came from Peter. They are way better than us. They invested because they were forced to do that. If you don't, Peter released you because he wanted to do the right thing. And we bashed him for 3 years. That is too strict. But this crew, this group, these players, are better than most of the players. Mm. So things must be done with policies. I don't think if there's a policy, well, why do we pay tax? It's the rule of the country. So let's make rules for these boys to invest for them. It's our duty as a country to do the right thing. These are kids.
And I mean, Shaba, just to pick that up, I mean, when you look into South Africa and agencies, it's been a conversation for years where it's not always a great one to have because footballers say, but no, I wasn't looked after there. Talk to us then now, your opinion on that relationship and really how South can also try and assist players who are potentially mismanaged by their agencies.
Oh. Yeah, this is a tough one.
With the agents, there are those who have done a sterling job, okay?
Mm. Yeah.
And obviously there's no house that does not have its own cracks.
For sure.
When there are problems, they are probably able to cover things accordingly. We never get to hear about them. But the worst of the worst that we see in here is very bad. And this is the question that I would ask the players. Say, if I sign a contract with an agent for 3 years, where I don't seek any accountability from him, who is whose boss in this situation? I'm a footballer, I'm a brand, you know, I play, and the public watches, I generate viewership, I've got a contract that is signed, my image works for me and all sorts of things. What value add are you bringing into my life as a footballer? And these discussions we have with the players, and some of them don't know, but it's normal that you have an agent because you might find a club. What finds you a team is your performance on the field. An agent becomes somebody that is there to represent you because you are not a negotiator, you know, a birthright. And SAFPU also tries to educate players. We want players to be good negotiators. It will eliminate the problem of handing over things that we can do for ourselves. If you have never tried to change the bulb, you're going to phone an electrician to come and change the bulb for you because you never thought it's something that's within your reach. It's those type of things. So we as footballers, we don't really, I think, challenge ourselves much, you know, when it comes to why do I have to have an agent? It's things that you need to look at. And he said, we have a situation where they are afraid to differ with the club bosses. Mm-hmm. And that's part of negotiation. I mean, I've said even with myself, from 18, I represented myself with all my contracts until I retired because I could speak, I could face the challenge, I could reason about what I understood I wanted as a footballer. I knew my value. Okay, it wasn't like airplane scene, you know, but my value is my value. So I understood that. But the long and short of it is that sometimes they do things because they seem fashionable. And when you don't understand your affairs, this is when somebody will take you and tell you things that don't exist.
Yeah.
And you will lose money and even pay from your monthly salary to a person who's not rendering a daily or monthly service. Because some agents deduct money on a monthly. But they see a player 3 times a year, and you find he just comes and brings soccer boots, and that's it. Now we go to Benson's funeral, he's no longer there. There's an agent. Mm-hmm. We sit with this agent. Benson doesn't have a funeral plan, Agana will, there's nothing. Everything that belongs to Benson will be dissolved by the state because he has not really assigned it to anybody else.
Yeah.
The agent, what have you been talking to this player about? Because you don't analyze his games, some of them don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have not spoken to him about serious life-changing decisions. What is wrong with that? No, it's this and it's that and it's this and it's that. And I said to players, you know, the biggest danger with them is that when you are a footballer, because somebody earns commission on your behalf, you will get things done for you. But you are not building yourself as a person. Because when football is over, the person is not getting commission. You would find out then that you can't even open a cell phone contract simply because you handed everything over to somebody else. You thought, I don't have to bother myself with this.
Yeah.
Come 35, come 40, that's the next phase of your life. Who are you in society? What character have you built? You know, what have you prepared yourself for? This is when there's a stumbling block and we start to go downwards instead of really holding ground and building the next phase of football, which is why we've been fighting for the text things with the hope that it really assists and players understand why we are there at the end of the day.
Mm. From us, maybe to the both of you gentlemen, there's two parts to this. There can be the one part where the players don't want to take full responsibility for their staff, and also there's another dark side of clubs exploiting players. We've had players earning R1,000 or, you know, some ridiculous amounts of money. Is that one of the problems that are still there now, where the clubs deliberately underpay professional football in South Africa?
Yeah, I think it still happens. You know, if you're a team and you have 40 players, and the grant is about $2 million, how much should the minimum wage?
Mm-hmm.
The sign-on fees there, which they must get. So I think administratively, teams are not, they don't have, I don't know, good people or knowledgeable people how to administrate. They sign over budget, and that's why they don't want us to see the boys, because they think we're not politic, and our job is to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about this, that teams deliberately don't want anyone to meet these boys. They don't want these boys to be acknowledgeable to grow because of exploitation. It is there, and you're afraid to talk about it. That is why now Mr. Mhlonge is back to say it's about time someone stands up. And I thank the union for bringing me in. I am going to fight for the rights of the players. And I am going to tell if the club doesn't want us to see the boys. And the public must know, and I think the public must deal with it. Supporters must understand what these boys are going through. I've retired because of the same situation with Nundu, where I was paying my salary, and they say I was paid 5,000. That's how I retired. I know what I'm talking about. Yes, players are expected. And we have to bring the company down. If the teams are not doing well, I think it's time for someone not playing the game to say it, and I'm the one that's gonna say it. Allow us to come in, equip the boys with knowledge, how to protect themselves, equip them with knowledge, how to be professional, and give them life-changing decisions, help them through this process. We're not there to fight them. We're not there for cases. No, we're tired of cases. We want limited cases. We just need progression. We need each other, we need the owners, we need the players for the game to continue. I think about time South Africa takes a different direction where everyone should be educated and the game, the competition will play itself out. But as human beings, we need to build each other as human beings. As Sana Wood, we've lost that one. We're now politicians. I think we must come back to Wood.
For you, what are some of the ridiculous numbers that you've come across from players? I mean, you don't have to mention people's names, but just...
No, as low as you can think about it. 2,000, 3,000... PSL, there are some who would get the issue of 5,000 rands. We know it happened with Duplus Vuma at the team where we never really expected. So you can understand how many of these situations do we have at other places. And that's really where we are. And as Benson says, what will heal the nation and really heal football and deliver on the promise given to these footballers who contribute to this beautiful game is to enforce regulations for their benefit. I mean, we spoke issue of minimum wage. And when the people or the participants that you really represent and fight for are very separate from the agenda, the journey takes longer. And it might seem as if what you do is counterproductive because they don't see results. But when we look inwards, you need to know that for me to get these results, I need to participate and be an active member and understand the issues that are happening. We are sitting right now, there's probably a player right now who's signing a professional contract earning 2.5. But if there was a regulation where a minimum wage was put in place to say in the NFT it's 15K, most probably, PSL it's 30 or 35, we would not worry about any contract because we know that this is what it comes out with and the exploitation level becomes much lesser. But to then have a professional who earns 2,000 rands with a limited career, we play for 7, 8, 9, 10 years if we're lucky. So when I reach a peak at the age of 27, if I start to earn 20,000, and at 35 to 40 when I retire, people say I squandered the money. Which money did I have? Because yeah. I earned less than a PA of a particular company who's going to work until they're 60 and go on pension, when I'm not going to get to that. And in any event, I'm disadvantaged by the system. Because everything that I contribute and pay towards that, I'm not going to get as a footballer because the sector is not looking after us. These are challenges that you have and that you're dealing with. And Benson says, we're not fighting. I'm not a politician, and neither is he. But we understand the rights of these players more than they do. And the reason we have to be patient with footballers, it is because we know what they don't know right now. And they require patience and continuous education. But collaboration and understanding with the teams will enable us to enhance these boys when the doors are open. Because we are not there to exist and fight labs. We don't want to destroy football. We want to contribute to the growth of the game. We want to collaborate with teams to ensure that we build tomorrow's leaders and we don't let these boys go out of the system and they become societal problems and a big tavern talk and a laughing stock of the country. But if we don't unite, simply because teams run away from the 10% of the infringement of these players' contracts and sacrifice or compromise the 90% that must really build character, capacity, and leadership from these players, we are then simply failing the players. We're not interested in cases, he says. If we can be able to sit and mediate, it saves SAFPO money. It saves the team's money to take matters to the courts. Because at the point in time right now, we sit with a very big legal debt. We must not hide that. Because SAFPO never falls when it comes to the representation of players' rights. But at the price of that, we incur a debt legally. We win cases, our victories are good, but we have a legal debt. What then happens with that? Like any other big company that deals with litigation matters, you end up owing lawyers because that's the nature of the business. We don't want that. I mean, we are not short of ideas. We are not stupid people. We can really now come with innovative ways. We can really now ensure that these players are enterprised. We must start talking the business of football and the business with themselves uniting and forming strategic partnerships to take over the football world, to own a farm, to own a building where people can stay in and rent. Yeah. You know, that's me saying I listen to it. Consortium. Why footballers are not thinking that way? I mean, just to move quickly in terms of what I'm saying. If you take the highest paid players in the team, I mean, right now I know that they say Sundowns is the highest paid. There are figures that are thrown in the media. Some are not true most of the time. But let's just assume that's exactly where they are. If each player, and you've got 10 players that can sit and say, okay, let's build business, all right? This is where we are. There's property, there's farming, there's whatever else. But how do we start to raise capital? And they say, all right, we've got these salaries. Right now, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been really dominant. We win the leagues. Can we take all our bonuses for 1 year and win bonuses and invest them into a particular scheme that will open together? December, let's open eyes and check how much we have. If we're talking 10 players, with what they've been getting now, especially even winning the African Football League, the bonuses were really crazy. Now, end of the year, how much do we have? They could probably have 15, 17, even 20 million as a start. Now, if you go to banks and you start to now say, we want this land, we want to build whatnot, you also get an addition in terms of what you are bringing in. So they can start a project at 40 million from the beginning. This is how we start to build empires as footballers. Can we then start to align our thoughts and challenge each other on such discussions? Because alone, it takes years. Yeah. If we are 10, we can build an empire within 3 or 4 years and make an impact and encourage those younger ones to say, this is an avenue that we must take. We must stop just going to play and we are known as people who play. This is work, and when we work, it ends at some point. After that, what have we built moving forward? We are tired of defending. We are tired of defending these players because they have not planned the right future. When we have the correct information, when we have the contacts where we can bring them and workshop them. I want to see a day where SAFU organizes a workshop on business. You have 80% of footballers present there. Give us the headaches of the logistics. Give us the financial nightmares. We can't afford this. This is a lot. Let that be our concern. But come, take what you can, go out there, come back better, build, and that's how we're going to have it. We want a proper class of footballers.
You know, I'm laughing. To say it bluntly, we must not have money because you must not take over football. Case closed. That's what we are fighting. We can't own our own teams. We must be domed. That's why even now with coaching, they say you need certificate. Who coached us? They coached us without certificate, and we've made it. We played in the World Cup without certificate. Our coach didn't have any qualifications. Now it's our time. There must be qualifications. They are closing us down not to participate in this game because we have experience.
Sure.
Hey.
That's a tough one. But I mean, when we look into the human element, gentlemen, in terms of the footballer, I mean, we can talk about the business part, but we also need to realize that athletes in general, there's also the human element. You talked about family earlier on, but there's also the element of just wanting to live your life and do what normal people do, be it going out, be just going to the movies, be just going out for ice cream, the human elements that any human being will crave. Talk to us about that, Benson, because, I mean, we look at footballers. I mean, I remember there's a time where, I'm just forgetting who we had in studio, and they were saying that, you know, we went out for drinks just after a game, we won, and pictures came out, and the media were like, oh my goodness, they are alcoholics, and they just bashed them for just having drinks. So talk to us about how also media perceives footballers into just having that human touch in their daily lives.
No, you want them to attack me now.
Yes, there must be a human element. But in life, or whatever you choose, there's consequences. To be a doctor is a sacrifice for you to be the best doctor. To be a teacher is a sacrifice. And also to be an athlete is a sacrifice.
For sure.
You can't live a normal life. That's not a normal career.
Yeah.
So, as I'm saying, there must be policies. If we did things right, I should be a millionaire now. Because I wanted to be normal. I wanted to go back in gas. And my life was not normal. I was the captain for the bigger teams. That's not a normal life. You cannot be a president and want to be a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
To become a president, you must think of solutions, how to progress, how to grow your country.
Mm-hmm.
So the position determines your life. Unless you don't know anything, you cannot be a priest and then say, I want to be live a normal life and from a corner. No. Whatever you choose, there's consequences. So those are the ones that I want to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences and the lifestyle. Professionals got this old lifestyle, unfortunately. Musicians, they have their own lifestyle. We can't say they must live like musicians. They'll end up wanting drugs for being hyper,
mm-hmm.
Tomorrow to go to training because you didn't sleep. No, as an athlete, there's a different life. If you really want to be the best, there's a own rules to mm-hmm. be an athlete, and that's what you have to know and understand. If you don't live it, you won't make it, unfortunately. You can't cheat the game.
So talk to us about that then, you know, that outgoing part, because you look into, we've had this conversation, where there are footballers back then where even Coach Stuart Baxter knows that certain players, you need to handle them in a certain kind of way. If a certain player needs a shot just before the game, make sure that you attend to that. And some footballers, I mean, some, they don't train well, right? Or they don't attend training but you know that when you need them to perform, they will show up. So talk to us about those special players that, as much as yes, they are professional, but then they also have an outgoing life, but they know how to balance the two between being a professional footballer but still having a life outside football.
I think we talk about the household characters. In the household, there's different characters.
Mm.
That must be dealt with by the club. Yes, if they go out and media write about it, which they don't understand. I think as media people also, as now Ubuntu, in the field and outside the field, there's two different personnel.
For sure.
So I think we must just not entertain that anymore, but you have to educate them. Drink and driving, it's a no-go.
Mm-hmm.
But going out, I used to tell the media, I'm 21 years old, I'm drinking Castle Light. And I am drinking Castle Light. And I'm performing. So if you sign me, I do drink after the game. Mm-hmm. At the airport, I do drink. I said, no, this is me. This is Benson. I'm a father. I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't come to train drunk, mm-hmm. but I do drink at my own space. Now, I don't think we have to write about that. I don't think we have to entertain that. That's the matters of the house. The house must deal with their own players because they know their characters. We have to deal with the performance
mm-hmm.
and the ill discipline of things that must not be done. Mm-hmm. Not going out must not be done. No, we human beings. I don't think we have to discuss that. They must live their lives
mm-hmm.
and balance the two.
I think just to add to what Mayanga is saying, recently now with the national team in PE, there was an issue with Jaden Adams. I think he arrived late for camp, and the coach was very strict to say, this is unacceptable, you can't behave like this when we're at this level. He sent him back home. It's the issues of the house that Benson is talking about, that if there is a level of discipline within the team, it must be dealt with. Special characters, this one behaves like this, this is how we deal with him, this one behaves like this, this is how we deal with him. But indiscipline cannot be tolerated, and we have to be very strict about that thing. Because when you are at this professional level, everybody must be professional, because if there is ill discipline, the team dynamics can be very, very complicated.
It's a key thing. Discipline is needed everywhere, in every area and aspect of one's life, Mahlatsi. I mean, even for us, it would be very unfortunate if we're an organization
mm-hmm.
that has a membership of drunk and irresponsible players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because tomorrow, I mean, our fundamental duty is to defend employment of the players.
Yeah.
But if we are seen to representing and promoting things that are not correct, it also hampers on the credibility of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And the teaching has to go both ways to say, the timing of everything you do is key. There are times where you must be at work, you need to be properly functional
mm.
and work. And there are times where you need to do your social things, because we need a breather.
That's
we are right. In camps, we travel, there's a lot of things that happen. So sometimes that socializing becomes important, but how do we do it? You know, the drinking and driving speaks about it. There are a number of campaigns that we know about that also, we need to also raise and move. We want to collaborate with these teams. The PSL want to collaborate with SAFA on these programs, because at the end of the day, we need to protect the product. This product is football, and the dignity and the respect of the game, if it's kept at an all-time high level, and the barometer is on an all-time high, then football will succeed in terms of that. So the unity amongst everybody is key. Let's navigate and guide these kids. That's very important. Protect these kids and ensure that they know that they have to live responsibly. But we must seek accountability. Even footballers as teammates, they have a responsibility to be accountable to one another. You know, when you start to deal with it that way,
yeah.
the coach does not even have to come and police people, because we all know why we are here, we all know what we want to achieve.
Yeah.
If you are messing up, we lose games. But if you are not, we win games and we get bonuses. Make me rich, I make you rich. It's a short-term career.
No.
Let us be selfish for victory, so that by the time we leave with the fruits in our pockets. It's just a matter of that. But the alignment, the thinking aspect, the mental health issues, social ills, any other thing that you may talk about is very essential and necessary. The timing of when and how becomes very key in terms of that.
Oh.
In terms of accountability, Shaba, I mean, you look into, we were talking to Keegan Masters now, and he was talking about the fact that he decided he had to, of course, find a sports psychologist because he felt that was important. Now, when you look into South African football, the importance, because you can check everything off, you know, a dietitian will have. You will have, of course, your physios. Everybody physically will be there. But now, in terms of then looking after the players mentally as well, is that something that you think that clubs also need to invest in?
Yeah, definitely. We spoke about this. I think we need to learn from those that have traveled. Fortunately, 2 weeks back, I was in Cape Town. We had a discussion with Delron Buckley. He wrote a book. playing overseas, and he was in Germany, and he was a Bafana player. He was a very, very big superstar. You know, we looked up to him. He was suffering from the mental health issues. So it doesn't mean that when you have the riches or you play for big teams, you are not going to experience any challenges. And psychologists will also be very key in helping to unlock your mind as a footballer, to find your strength within yourself. There's many key areas that you really need to work on. And that's one aspect that we really can't ignore. We might look at teams that might say, but we don't have the resources.
Yeah.
That is also true. You know, to say, if we bring a psychologist, it will cost us this much money. We are struggling right now to even cover the logistical part of things and also honor part of these contracts. So even when they know the need and see the need, sometimes the doing becomes a problem. I mean, the mental health issue, we had a partnership with Lifeline for a number of years. I mean, a lot of the guys would have been assisted. Emil Paron, he had sessions. I mean, we also took him with his wife, because if you are damaged as a man, you have to think beyond you as a person to say, what have you done to the household, and how do we then bring you back and try to ensure that the leaders of the family are set down and they are rechanneled in terms of that aspect and be assisted, you know, refocus their minds and all of those things. It has been there with Tombe, who used to play for Sundowns. It's those wellness things that we had at that point when we had the relationship, because this is very key. Most teams do that have resources. They offer that service, which is a good thing. And I think they need to continue doing that, because a lot of these guys, they are troubled beyond football. And if nobody really assists them and they don't have anybody that they trust to really talk about those issues, it becomes a ghost that will forever be hanging on their shoulders. And whenever it attacks, it takes them at any time when it wants and pleases. And we end up thinking, labafana bahlane, but there are a lot of issues. The pressure, the fame, there's a number of things that they have to really be adjusted to. And it must start at the development level. Ama life skills. We used to have that at IX. And AmaZulu, even when we're professional players, there would be a program that comes weekly or bi-weekly, where senior life skills, and they teach us about certain things. Some guys thought maybe it's not appropriate, but it teaches you about a way of life, respect for one another, how to really integrate and mingle, how to build relations, how you handle yourself and how you speak to others, how does it affect you? Because some relations you can build based on your personality whilst you are still a footballer that might benefit you post your life as a footballer. So it's just programs in place and everybody coming in and joining on those things.
Another thing that I want to check, it has always been a feeling of mine that we don't really take it serious in South Africa. It's the issue of physical health. If you look in rugby and cricket, they are very strict when it comes to head injuries, concussion. I often see in South Africa players bang heads, and then they just go there, put water, and then people stand up and play. I'm just fearing that one day, and God forbid, a player is going to die in this country on the field because of a head injury. And we don't talk much about it. And is that one of the issues that you guys are really, you know,
yes,
putting
there was a campaign here, FIFPro, if I must just put it out. They started internationally. It was a concussion drive where they looked and studied the effects of that. There's a good team of doctors that are there, research over years. And every time we met as the FIFPro Africa in Africa, it would be a discussion. Globally, it's a bigger discussion, because we also need to look at international way of doing things and models and come back and bring it home. We have that and we understand the effects of that. But if you don't get sufficient time to really recruit at these teams during preseason, as the CBA says, in line with clause Article 5, you have problems. If SAFPO wants to come and really bring all these things, and you are only giving us an hour, when in a preseason we can have a workshop, which is a proper workshop for 5 hours, where we have a first 2 hour segment, there's tea break like normal people, and we come back and then we complete this rest of that part. There's education and imparting of knowledge that happens there. But with all these things that also affect and endanger the players' lives, they know it from a point of, no, me, I'm strong, I'm riding bacon, I'm if I And that's not how it is, because others, it affects them beyond football. They start to really go crazy, literally, where they buy a shot because of these things. So it needs to be monitored. We had those chats, Tyson, to learn, you know, I was a truck is cutting land. We spoke. There's a information sharing that has happened. Fortunately, we are close. So he read into it and there's that understanding. But we have neglected this part, and it's a very serious thing. Because if you look at the deaths also in football, they happen in the field of play, where kunyo ngama cardiac arrest, where it's a number of things. And all of us must really unite in investigate these things. We must also share and circulate the information to assist these members. You know, we don't own the monopoly of ideas, but we must help each other for the players.
Yeah, because in rugby it's so serious that if it's serious, you get hit on Saturday. They check you, you don't pass the concussion test. You can't play the next Saturday, you can only play that other Saturday. That's how serious they take. In our game,
continuous monitoring is key.
Mr. Matla, you say one day. There's no one day. There's already someone that died in Mpumalanga playing the first division.
Yeah.
And secondly, we talk about concussion. There's no fitness test done. People, they say they've done fitness tests, they don't get their report about their heart problem. Only vested it more the late chem who
was this guy?
Fatty. Before he went to Vest, he played for another team. I don't know how to call him. They didn't pick it up. Why? Because I don't know how they do it. I don't want to disgrace the doctors. But they do fitness tests pre-season. You don't know where you're weak. You don't know what to fix. And in the first division, diet is a problem. You know, we need less players eating before and after. Climate change. We're still going to have people passing out on the field of play. So those are the issues that we must fix it. But we need club owners to come to the party about that. So it's a serious issue that you must deal with.
It definitely is. I remember the time when we had, of course, a physio, a doctor as well, who joined us here saying Dr. Klopp, you're talking about that we also don't do eye tests, where there's cases where we found that players are actually blind.
Yes.
There's a part where they don't see. So tests do need to be done, but unfortunately, to cut costs, Shaba.
And Dr. Klopp,
they're not done.
No, she's raising something important. Yeah? I think in a little teammate in Asia, because never feel our feet away.
Made a very thing that he discovered that there was a player who he couldn't see on this side or on this side.
Yeah.
And he said all the time they killed him on that side when he was on the But before we go to the issue of post tests, guys, I think we are talking here about women's football. That one, I think it will probably need its own show because of the nature of the fact that it's not professional and all that kind of thing. And are you also operating that space where you are helping our ladies?
Yes, indeed.
And I'm sure it's a complete mess there, I'm sure.
Yes, but it's very exciting. What is exciting is their thought process and thinking capacity. They have an edge. And let me tell you why. They play varsity football. They are students.
Yeah.
They understand their rights. They understand contracts. They read. They pay attention to detail, you know. It's unlike us, where Benson was taken at the age of 13, Alexander, Wafakwe grounded and he played and he missed those stages. So for them, there's an advantage part in terms of that. It won't take us too long to really conquer and achieve what they want, because that's what we want for them. If I take it back, it was easy for us to really interact with the leadership of Banyana Banyana as those players that were there and the whole team. And in a week, they understood their agenda. They never folded. And we carried on because they knew that what we fight for is what they want. And if they don't stand up for it, they will never achieve that. This is where the difference is. And they got their gains. With the male football side of things, we've tried for many years. We are making progress, but it's still going very slow, simply because, as I said, the players still don't understand the football agenda and where they need to participate, because we weren't taught. At school, kunama campaigns, there's Fees Must Fall, there's ICOSAS, there's the EFF Student Council, there's ANC Student Council, all those things. They participate in that because it's about their interest in education. Now they pay attention to detail to those things and they shape their future at school. So coming to football, them being activists is not a problem. With us as footballers, we don't even know what that is. We've never even attended one political meeting that is about the issues that affect our area, even where we live. We always thought this is not for us. I mean, we sometimes didn't even vote because football, and it's not our thing. And this education is very important. Women's football, we are going to achieve what we have not achieved with men's football, simply based on the aspect of understanding the concept. The fact that they've been disadvantaged for many years. They are angry people, rightfully so. And us as men, we are letting them down because we need to really advocate for the uplifting of these women. Women go through a lot, as you would know. They carry us through and through. And in this one thing where they excel, it's also embarrassing, Mawikabanga. But we must applaud those that have taken the steps to put it where it is now. We are the best in Africa. We are recognized globally. We don't have a professional league. That's exactly where we are. We have players that play in this league who don't know salaries. Some we thought they are getting a stipend, but the more we dig deeper into things and investigate, they're not even getting a salary at the semi-professional league, but we are the best in the world. Sponsorship needs to come through, flock in the money so that we really raise the flag and professionalize women's football. Is it political? Probably it is, because SAFA is responsible for its development. Now, if this women's football is taken and professionalized, who does it belong to? That's a question that we need to look at and ask. And why for so many years are we holding on to this semi-professional status and not releasing them into a professional field? Is it resources? Is it a political drive? Is it one of us who wants really this relevance to say we own something and this is women's football? Because I think football will die based on the politics of what's happening. And the leadership of football in the country, be the PSL, be it SAFA, and all stakeholders involved, I think we really need to sit down and have a conference where we engage vigorously, radically so, to ensure that some of these things, we put them forward. Because these women deserve respect, and right now they are not given an inch of what they deserve. And SAFU is there. We have members, we have recruited, we started educating. It's very exciting. Are there no threats? There are threats that come to them to say, don't be involved with those people because we'll deal with you. But they know better, and it becomes much more easier for us.
How do we deal with them, by the way? When they say they will deal with you, what's the repercussion?
We don't know, but there are those who are powerful who say things that we never really get to comprehend and understand. And we are not folding. We are not nervous. We are not scared. But they give us the strength. With these women, I'm saying, let's watch, Matlats. We are going to conquer. And in Ikfuna Bambili, in that mashe. Because that's where it is.
But I mean, Shaba, you talk about sponsorship, right? And I mean, before we talk the text in terms of the footballers, I want to find out from you as to, I mean, we can't say that corporate is not interested in sport in South Africa, because you look into rugby, you look into cricket, and now motorsport. Keegan Masters just told us that there's more manufacturers that are jumping on. But somehow football, it's the one, and it's not just the women's game, because also the men's game, we touched on the fact that there are some teams that can't afford to pay and they can't manage their logistical issues. So why is it that there's that gap in terms of the corporate and football in South Africa?
Football is a black-owned sport. Cricket isn't. Rugby is not. Let's look at the success measures. That's exactly what it tells us. Sponsorship is not coming into this black product. It's a racial discussion that I think we need to really look into, because those that have an advantage and the power of resource, and us coming as the previously disadvantaged, the few that comes into football are the ones that cares about the game. Others are taking their money where they think their money belongs. Football is going to collapse at the rate we are going. How many teams have a sponsor in the PSL that can sustain? We have about four, if not five teams that have a personal sponsor. The rest, they rely on the grant, and God knows where they get the money to keep it alive and keep it moving. There are problems. And everywhere else, it's booming with sponsorships. What is this issue that we are not discussing? What is this elephant in the room that we are not really looking at and talking about? Because this is the number one sport in the world. at the end of the day, we can't suffer with sponsorships to a level at SAFA even where they also struggle to get a sponsorship. Never mind the performance, but what is this product that we have? And if this product is not really looked after, it creates these problems that you are talking about. So it's not about how we do it. It's not the fact that we're not playing entertaining football. It has been the thing that has been with us since the past. The simple issue is that I don't think we get the support on the basis that we are not predominantly a white game as labeled by those that are in the industry. That is why sponsorship goes everywhere else. And women's football will find itself in the clutches of that, and that's how we will suffer and take longer to actually elevate it to the level that is necessary. We must level the playing field.
Mm. And Shaba, if you want to see how deep this madness goes, look at a simple thing like Varsity Cup. Varsity Cup, because it's largely white universities.
Yes.
The sponsors are flocking to that thing. People who can get more mileage if they were in the PSL, for example, or even the NMD, if maybe NMD teams are on TV. So it's a black and white thing, and I think we need to find a way how do we break it, because we simply cannot go on like this.
It's a discussion we must have for the unity of the country.
It's absolutely like this.
And the progress that's necessary.
100%. And then before, of course, we wrap things up, I mean, we then look into text. Maybe Benson, you can talk about this in terms of then, you know, footballers, why then they text the same way that we are, whereas come 35, if you're lucky, maybe 40, you retire and it's done. But when I'm 40, I'm probably progressing.
You work until you're 60.
Yeah, 55.
It's the same or more for athletes.
It's probably more, because athletes at some stage, the most of them were the
40%.
They earn more money or whatever.
Yeah, it's based on your earnings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would bat for about 10 years, and then I forfeit because I'm not 60 years old. Something must be done with that. Mm. But the SG wasn't the number, man. I'm not gonna turn in a late term as a footballer. I think some of that money must be invested for us.
Mm.
I think we must have maybe a retirement fund, if not a pension fund. There must be a special way that they can help us with that. You know, we put in a lot of money in the coffers of the government. Mm-hmm. I think they must do something for us also. All the athletes, not only footballers, but I think athletes in general. Yeah, in general.
For sure. SG, just to conclude on that.
The minister is a man of action. Are you meeting him maybe to discuss this issue? It was a critical issue.
It is. Yes, we've reached out. And there's a pending meeting. We just await confirmation, but we have written to him passionately about this. And this is not a new issue.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know, you know, it's not a new issue. And the agenda doesn't change. But the lives of the players are affected. Who cares? Do the supporters care? Does the government care about its own people? Do club bosses care about their own players? Are our families really, really touched about this aspect in terms of footballers just becoming good donors, benefiting a system that is not going to give them something back whilst everybody else benefits? It's exactly what we are talking about and what we are fighting for, and we spoke about this. Previous minister, it started even with Mbalula when he was a minister. There was never just action taken the way we hoped that it would. With Comrade Zizi, I think we had found each other in terms of that, but unfortunately this is where we are. The new minister, his energy fuels us, and I like the fact that he takes decisions. You know, sometimes you find people in leadership who are good at what they do, but their problem is indecision. When you are indecisive, you end up not making the right decisions to benefit things. Some decisions will be bad. Some will be good, but take the chance and just throw it in there. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, why can't we break the case? You are paying tax. He's paying tax. If my local tax, or so Glenda, so if you have 60 years, you apply.
I'm trying.
I don't know if you can.
No, I'm getting healthy. I don't know.
You're waiting for that 60.
I'm trying to get 60. And if I get there, we didn't get it on yourself. I was not paying tax for the past years.
It becomes complicated. Yeah, but the reality now, if we put it, let's just quickly, as Sival,
Not that it's my show, I'm not disrespecting.
No.
The tax system, when it was designed, football was not work. It's a regulation that was put in place before we were actually considered as workers.
Yeah.
And when you are taxed, the tax man looks at your earnings and they allocate the money that must be taxed to a bracket that you belong to. They don't look at a career. We are seasonal workers. We work based on contracts, all of us as sportsmen, and there's a certain age where we have to cut it and go. Mm-hmm. You contribute, you can be a presenter until you are 80. You can be a coach until you are 90, if that allows. Footballers, we can't at this particular point in time. And the money that we contribute does not benefit us. You take your pension, you go elsewhere, you do your things that you want to do. But we have a sickness, which is called life after football. This sickness leaves players destitute. They become poor men who lose everything after their football, right? They play football. Some of them don't like school. It's understandable, but they can do practicals, physical things like TVET colleges. There are those who also take on school. There are those who retire as qualified engineers.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to go into a system, start learning and grow. And maybe after 10 years, you start to live a normal life based on what you would have been earning.
Mm-hmm.
So if I contribute on a monthly from 100,000 rand salary, 45,000 as per the tax bracket of 47, it means I'm only taking home 55,000 rands. And this contract that I have might be my last one. Maybe the next one is the last one, maybe the third one, but it's fairly short. So per annum, if you take my 45,000 and you multiply it by 12, including the bonuses, including the signing on fees and all that we'll have, typically the highest paid players today in South Africa, they contribute over 2.5 to 3 million with tax that goes to SARS. So in a contract of 3 years, you are giving most likely about 5 million as an individual player.
Mm.
So if it's a 6-year contract, we are looking at anything between 7 and 10 million that you have given away. And people say, but you were earning a lot of money, why aren't you saving? My 100,000 looks good on paper. I don't have medical aid. They don't have the benefits. It's only UIF that takes the money. As per the regulations in terms of the football sector, nothing else looks at us. So with this 55,000 that I have, I must still have medical aid. I've got dependents. I need to buy a house and take care of the bond. There's a grocery aspect where people need to eat. I need to have investments and live a life. 55,000 is not a lot of money. So when I'm done, we are saying, government, it's okay. Maybe what we are saying right now is stupid and it doesn't make sense. Please make it make sense for the benefit of sports people so that at the age of 35 at least, they come back and there's something that is there assisting them for the second phase of their lives, because we know the problem. All of them at that age, 90%, 80%, they crumble and they fall down and they vanish. How do we then elevate those people and bring them back? Let us change this regulation. Deregulate these current tax policies and ensure that it is fair for everyone who lives within the country and it benefits everybody. Because we are not going to get to 60. And society, the argument then becomes, but after football, you must get employed elsewhere and then you'll be okay. It's not always easy.
For sure.
Football absorbs us, most of us, after football. But what are you then saying? I'm saying it's okay that we continue with what is happening. We don't want that.
No.
Help us. Help us find a solution for these footballers, because this tax money can go into an investment that addresses the pension fund. It's done in Europe. The guys are going back at 38, 39 to collect their money, or at 35. They are millions, they come back, they build the next phase of their lives. Why was it necessary for Europe to implement that regulation? They saw the problem and they came with a solution. In South Africa, what are we stubborn about? In Africa, what are we stubborn about? Why do we think we can't change things on the basis that we found them the way they are? We deregulate. We must fight for what is essential for us and the life that we're living at this particular point in time. Amarulza wa vele zulwini. God did not give us this tax system. It's us as people who had it. We are saying their time is gone. We live in a new era now. Look at what we do. Look at what you take from us as footballers, which is very painful because we end up on the other side destitute. Now, if 45% is taken, Matlas, for an example, we've got actual scientists, we've got accountants, we have brilliant minds that can really sit and workshop this idea. If 20% of that is taken from every player who's in that tax bracket, obviously it will be work pro rata based on those who are at the lower level. it's put somewhere in a pension scheme. Mm-hmm. Benefits the players. Government can still access part of the money to fix the streets, pay the soldiers, police, nurses. We understand that they have a responsibility to do that. We are saying take it, but not all of it. Also allow this money to also help and work for us as footballers. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, we are really, really not benefiting anything. It's a call that we are putting out there. There's a campaign. The beautiful thing, which I think I'm proud of since arriving at SAFCO, there's a unified voice in terms of this. We spoke about it first. Nothing happened in the years. Players signed a petition. They were even in a hurry to sign a petition before the membership formed, because this is a burning issue for these footballers. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are on a campaign. They embrace the campaign, they hold the placards, and they speak with pride, calling for what they are calling for. Because people always say, we are challenged, we are stupid. Footballers are actually standing for something that is big and that will make waves. And we need support from the general public. We need it from other sporting codes to actually move and challenge the space for what we want. And if we get this, it will be a game changer for everybody else. We have a responsibility to fix what's happening now for the young ones that are coming. And the days of being self-centered are gone. The days of us contributing and donating money are gone. I'm a player. I render a service. I get a salary. Mm-hmm. You are a member of SAFPU. SAFPU renders a service. You pay subscription. Right?
Yeah.
I'm a worker. I pay towards tax. Tax does not benefit me as well. It needs to. So we must change this. And we will.
We definitely will.
Maybe the genu will help you.
No, we hope so. Any door that's open, we will.
If
it means I'm holding placards, it's no benzene in the morning. I'm a robot. I'm underpinned. I'm a speedos. We'll be there to ensure that we push this move.
Thank you so much for your time. We really do appreciate it. This was an insightful conversation. We're hoping that you enjoyed it as much as we did, but we'll leave it for here for now, and we'll call them back, of course, to get a report. They must come back so that they can tell us the updates.
I had a few questions I want to ask, but we'll reserve them for next time.
Thank you so much for joining us. Take care and goodbye.